Good evening. How are we all doing?
Good. Not nice to see everyone's all wrapped up nice and warm. Autumn's kicked back already. September, straight into autumn. I'm going to apologise straight at the outset. I kind of picked up an ulcer yesterday on my tongue. So if I mispronounce words, it's not because I can't read my notes. It's because I've got an ulcer. My wife had a great day yesterday, just me going, all day. So I apologise in advance. So tonight we're going through, continuing on our sermon series called Follow. And Jenny kind of kicked this off last week. And I think really, really poignantly, very simply, of following is just very much that. If you kind of feel that God is telling you to do something, you kind of pretty much just do it. And this isn't really about rules. This isn't about regulations, because that's not what Christianity is about. Because if you have rules and regulations, that's a religion. So before I jump into the main kind of sermon series and what I'm going to talk about this evening, I just really want to highlight the difference between gospel, religion. So I guess in a simple way, we've all seen it and heard about it, where you can kind of be welcomed into a circle so long as you meet X, Y criteria. You kind of change your way, whether that's the style of your dress, how you talk, what you do, whether you give extra money. That, in a way, is a religion. What religion is you have to save yourself first before anything else. But the gospel, that's not what that's about. Here, Jesus does the saving. You just say yes. And following Jesus, he just accepts you for who you are. No matter what your past experience is, no matter what knowledge you have or don't have, he just accepts you because of blind grace. But whereas religion, you have to meet certain standards. It's almost you have to climb up a ladder to get to the top. And with Jesus, he says, I want all of you. I want your past, your present, and your future self. So I'm just going to read a story which hopefully draws that out. So once upon a time, there was a gardener who grew an enormous carrot. He took it to his king and said, My lord, this is the greatest carrot I've ever grown or ever will grow. Therefore, I want to present it to you as my token of my love and respect for you. The king was touched. He discerned the man's heart. And so he turned to the man as he was walking away and says, Wait, you clearly are a good steward of the earth. I own a plot of land right next to yours. I want to give it to you freely as a gift, so you can garden it all. The gardener was amazed. He left the court delighted, went home rejoicing. But there was a nobleman at the back of the king's court who overheard all of this. And he said, My, if that's what you get for a carrot, what if you give the king something better? So the next day, the nobleman comes before the king, and he was leading a handsome black stallion. He bowed low and he says, My lord, I breed horses, and this is the greatest horse of my love and respect for you. And this is the greatest horse I've ever bred and will ever breed. Therefore, I'm going to give you this horse as a token of my love and respect for you. But the king discerned his heart and said, Thank you, you're dismissed. The nobleman was somewhat perplexed. The king sensed this and said, Let me explain. The gardener was giving me the carrot, but you were giving the horse to yourself. See, that's what religion is. Religion kind of focuses on yourself, whereas the gospel focuses on Jesus. And I've just got a short video that I'm just going to hopefully draws that out even a bit more, if we play.
What if I told you Jesus came to abolish religion? What if I told you voting Republican really wasn't his mission? What if I told you Republican doesn't automatically mean Christian, and just because you call some people blind doesn't automatically give you vision? I mean, if religion is so great, why has it started so many wars? Why does it build huge churches but fails to feed the poor? Tell single moms God doesn't love them if they've ever had a divorce, but in the Old Testament, God actually calls religious people whores. Religion might preach grace, but another thing they practice, tend to ridicule God's people, They did it to John the Baptist. They can't fix their problems, and so they just mask it, not realizing religion's like spraying perfume on a casket. See, the problem with religion is it never gets to the core. It's just behavior modification, like a long list of chores. Like, let's dress up the outside, make it look nice and neat. But it's funny, that's what they used to do to mummies while the corpse rots underneath. Now I ain't judging, I'm just saying, quit putting on a fake look. Because there's a problem if people only know that you're a Christian by your Facebook. I mean, in every other aspect of life, you know that logic's unworthy. It's like saying you play for the Lakers just because you bought a jersey. See, this was me too, but no one seemed to be onto me. Acting like a church kid while addicted to pornography. See, on Sunday I'd go to church, but Saturday getting faded, acting if I was simply created to just have sex and get wasted. See, I spent my whole life building this facade of neatness, but now that I know Jesus, I boast in my weakness. Because if grace is water, then the church should be an ocean. It's not a museum for good people, it's a hospital for the broken. Which means I don't have to hide my failure, I don't have to hide my sin. Because it doesn't depend on me, it depends on Him. See, because when I was God's enemy, and certainly not a fan, He looked down and said, I want that man. Which is why Jesus hated religion, and for it He called them fools. Don't you see so much better than just following some rules? Now let me clarify. I love the church, I love the Bible, and yes, I believe in sin. But if Jesus came to your church, would they actually let Him in? See, remember He was called a glutton and a drunkard by religious men. But the Son of God never supports self-righteousness, not now, not then. Now back to the point, one thing is vital to mention, how Jesus and religion are on opposite spectrums. See, one's the work of God, but one's a man-made invention. See, one is the cure, but the other's the infection. See, because religion says do, Jesus says done. Religion says slave, Jesus says son. Religion puts you in bondage, while Jesus sets you free. Religion makes you blind, but Jesus makes you see. And that's why religion and Jesus are two different clans. Religion is man searching for God. Christianity is God searching for man. Which is why salvation is freely mine, and forgiveness is my own. Not based on my merits, but Jesus' obedience alone. Because He took the crown of thorns and the blood dripped down His face. He took what we all deserve. I guess that's why you call it grace. And while being murdered, He yelled, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. Because when He was dangling on that cross, He was thinking of you. And He absorbed all your sin and He buried it in the tomb, which is why I'm kneeling at the cross saying, come on, there's room. So for religion, no, I hate it. In fact, I literally resent it. Because when Jesus said, it is finished, I believe He meant it.
Should have said at the outset, it's very American. I love that video because I think it just brings it all together, right, in that sense. And what I love, one thing he says in there right at the very outset, is the essence of Jesus is he came here to deconstruct religion and show the way that we should worship. And so I'm just going to ask that we have that at the back of our minds as I kind of go through the talk this evening. So tonight, we're going to look at two passages of when Jesus called the first disciples. So we've got two passages. First one is Matthew 4:18-22, and then the second one is Luke 5:1-11, which we'll come on to. So Matthew first, which is 9:6-8 in your books or Bibles. So the calling of the first disciples. As Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come follow me, Jesus said, and I will make you fishers of men. At once they left their nets and followed him. Going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in the boat with their father Zebedee, preparing their nets. Jesus called them, and immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. Okay, so when we read Matthew, and in this short section, I gotta be honest, does anyone else go, oh, nah, I do not do anything like this? I mean, you just see it, like, look, you've got, he's walking along, sees Andrew and Simon, and Jesus says, come follow me, and they just leave everything and go. And then not only that, you get it even worse, it's like the Zebedee brothers, they leave their father. Like, he just walks along and says, come follow me, and they get up and go. clearly, by the looks of it, they don't even say goodbye, Dad. See you later. We're coming home. It's like, we're off to follow this guy. And you kind of see it here, and you're like, and I'm like, wow, not even half the time. I don't even do half of this. And I guess that's probably part of the point in the last video was with religion. And this is, in essence, my own interpretation of religion. It's kind of saying that I have to quit everything to follow Jesus. I have to quit my work and become a full-time minister. Well, actually, no, that's not the point. Because Martin Luther, the great reformer, says that man's natural tendency is to be religious and not a follower of Jesus. We have to train ourselves to be followers. This is a daily discipline. We all see this, really, because how many of us always go, oh, man, I didn't read my Bible today. Oh, I didn't pray. That's a religious mindset. That's not a relational following Jesus mindset. So let's jump on into the next gospel at page 1032 in your Bibles. And let's read Luke. This is chapter 5, verse 1. Calling of the first disciples. One day, as Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, also known as the Sea of Galilee, with the people crowding around him and listening to the word of God. He saw at the water's edge two boats, left there by the fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little from shore. Then he sat down and taught the people from the boat. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into deep water and let down the nets for a catch." Simon answered, "Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything. But because you say so, I will let down the nets." When they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. So they signaled to the partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both boats, so full that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord, I am a sinful man." For he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. Then Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on, you will catch men." So they pulled their boats up and left everything and followed him. Okay, so anyone notice a bit of a difference between the two kind of gospel stories? It's quite nice to know that Luke actually did the thorough work, whereas Matthew just kind of said it as it was. So in Luke's gospel, we get more of a flavouring around what's kind of happening. So we know that they're down by the Sea of Galilee, which is the next slide, which is a sea. This is kind of the Sea of Galilee. As you can kind of see, you've got Capernaum at the top, Tiberias, which was Herod's capital city. The sea itself is 646 feet below sea level. It's apparently a very peaceful, tranquil place, unlike the Dead Sea, which is further down at the bottom, where nothing exists. The weather in and around this place is very, very nice. It's quite cool, very good warm. Temperature's probably a mid-range of about 22 degrees kind of thing. Perfect holiday temperature. Yet due to the geography being so low, and also the mountains, causes a lot of storms. You can actually go there on holiday if you want to. And you can actually go into a museum and see a first century boat that archaeologists dug up. And was very likely kind of similar type of boats that Jesus got onto in Luke's gospel. So from the gospel stories here, and the ones we've read, Matthew and Luke, Mark also has the account as well, we see that Jesus has gone down to the Sea of Galilee in the day. If you move on to the next slide as well. So you've got two other pictures, as you can tell, beautiful, looks glorious. And he's kind of gone down in the day, possibly morning, maybe mid-morning. And we kind of see right at the outset that he's seen two boats that are left by the fishermen who have been out night fishing. So why night fishing, you might ask? So I've already mentioned the weather in Galilee is very good. It's a great place if you want a suntan. If you're a fish, however, and you like cool waters, you need to go deep. So you need to drop down deep. Therefore, when you're kind of going, you're fishing your nets, the fish aren't at the top, they're at the bottom, so you can't get them. So they go down into the deep waters in the day, and yet in the evening, when the waters kind of cool back up again, they rise back up. So hence why you go fishing in the evening. And N.T. Wright has famously gone fishing, spent 3 days fishing in the daytime, didn't catch a fish, went fishing in the evening, caught a fish. So it does show that is a true sentiment, if you want to go and try it. We also know there's a large crowd with Jesus, and he's beginning to kind of teach there, but he kind of goes onto the boat. But also the fishermen are cleaning their nets nearby. So Jesus is teaching, and then you've got the fishermen next to him. So very clearly, these guys are probably just cleaning their nets, having been working, listening to Jesus and going, okay, okay. And Jesus now kind of looks around and goes, oh, there's a boat. Now, part of the geography on the Sea of Galilee is up by Capernaum, the kind of enclave goes in, which means if you push out a little bit into the shore, you can even go and do it today. You can just go out a little bit further, and you can talk, and it's almost like a big amphitheater. You can just talk as normal voice, and everybody in and around there can hear you. Jesus takes note of that and does it. So Jesus is kind of goes out, asks Peter or Simon if he can use the boat, and pushes it out a little from shore, to which he does. And he starts speaking. So Peter is kind of like, we've already seen here, he says, you know, can I use your boat? And he says, yeah, sure. I mean, this guy's been working all night. He's probably quite tired. He just wants to get home, see his wife, kids, have food, go to bed, because he's working the next night. This is a minor inconvenience of Jesus asking Peter to kind of use the boat. And then after he's spoken, he does the teaching, he turns to Peter and says, let's go fishing. Let's go out and drop the net. So let's just stop here for a moment. Think you're Peter, right? I'll give you Peter's background and think through your reaction when Jesus says, you're a professional fisherman. You're a businessman of boats of fish. Because clearly he, you know, the Zebedee brothers are part of his partnership. You know that fishing in the evening time in the Sea of Galilee is the best. It's the only time you go fishing in the Sea of Galilee. You know that for a fact. The night before you didn't catch anything. And now a non-fisherman tells you, let's go fishing. Your response? Clearly a carpenter. Should stick to making those chairs, Jesus. There was nothing about fishing. And that's probably kind of like, if you read through what Simon or Peter kind of says in verse 5, he says, Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything. So he's kind of almost just saying, look, Master, that word master is kind of almost a backhanded compliment. Because rabbis in those day and ages, you would often refer to them as rabbis. The master thing, he's kind of going, yeah, you kind of seeing you're a rabbi, you kind of seeing this big deal, I'll give you that kind of compliment. Don't really know you, but sure, I'll drop it in. Master, you seem to have some respect. Then you kind of go, I've worked all night, I'm really tired, I just want to go home, didn't catch anything last night, and you're kind of forgetting, I'm the professional fisherman here, Jesus. But then he says something amazing. But because you say so, I will let down the nets. So he has some form of respect for Jesus, having heard him teach while he's been cleaning his nets, and probably heard about him, because you have to remember that by this time, Jesus is starting to get a bit of a following, because clearly, you know, he's been at the shore, he's been pushed back because there's so many people around. He would have known him, he would have heard already the start to stories about it. So he said, yeah, sure. So out of respect, he goes. And then what happens? They go fishing, they catch so much fish that almost probably about four, definitely two boats begin to sink in the water because there's so much fish. Bearing in mind, the night before they caught nothing. And what does Peter then do? Well, we see his response here. Because when he saw this, he drops to his knees and he says, go away from me, Lord, I'm a sinful man. He's kind of saying, hey, I'm the worst person here. You can't be around. You're a holy person. This is clearly a God act. God is clearly doing something here. I can't be here. This isn't right. And also what's really interesting is as we read that line, he says, go away from me, Lord. At the start he said, Master. He's now changed it to Lord. And here, Peter knows that there is no way, shape or form, that those fish could have been caught unless that was a God act. Unless that was an intervention of God, there is no way the amount of fish they caught could have happened. But what we see, and Peter's reaction, is almost an imitation of religion shaping. He's acting like a first century Jewish individual would. Because their belief was that God only worked for the pious and the holy. Their belief system was, unless you were a rabbi, God never spoke to you. God never came anywhere near you. And what we find amazing here is when we admit our own inability and our sin, this is a prerequisite for service. Humility is the elevator for spiritual greatness. Because Jesus used Peter's humility and he became the rock which Jesus built his church. If you go to the next slide, because you've got a massive church named after him in Rome. All because he just humbled himself before Jesus. And he chose the next step in his faith, in following him. Taking a step to go out fishing. And Peter got this. This is Peter's Basilia. It's absolutely monumental. It took 50 years to build just for Peter's burial ground. Next slide. And look on the detail on the inside. All because Peter went fishing. So I think when we see from these stories and the gospel accounts, is actually we're all fishers and men. And that our lives find fullest meaning as we follow Jesus, his call to follow him in advancing the gospel. So here's a question for each of us here tonight. Are you fishers and men, or are you keepers of the aquarium? Happy to go to the easy places and not the dark places where people are hurting. I'll say it once more. Are you fishers and men or keepers of the aquarium? From this story, I think we learn a lot about the next steps in following Jesus. The first disciples didn't get caught up in, hey, how much time do I need to pray? What does a church service look like? They just got out the boat and followed. We need to focus less on rules and regulations and more time in doing the next steps that Jesus wants us to do. So practically, what does this look like? I think there's three things, or three types of individuals. So firstly, you might be in the crowd right now. You're the person who's kind of just starting to listen. You kind of heard about Jesus. You're starting to come along, asking questions. You've got doubts. And for you, the next step could very much just be coming back to church next week. It could be opening up and reading the gospel accounts of Jesus. It could even be sitting down with somebody and just asking questions and exploring answers that you don't know right now. And if that is you, I would challenge you and commend you to carry on doing that. That's a good thing. If you have doubts, do not worry. Secondly, you could be the fisherman. You may have already heard Jesus talk a number of times. You could very well know who he is. You've been investigating for a little while, and you're thinking, yeah, this is kind of sounding very true. I get the story. I get the point. And the next thing for you could be inconveniencing yourself. As you saw, the fishermen, they allowed Jesus the time to get in the boat. They had to stop preparing the nets just to inconvenience themselves so Jesus could do his talking. So what does that look like for you? Well, that could be potentially joining a home group, getting stuck into something in church, or even just committing to do something that you know Jesus has been talking to you to do. Thirdly, you could be Peter. You've seen how Jesus has impacted your life. You know, but now you're kind of not sure what's next. It's as though you've kind of come to that conclusion that, hey, I'm not worthy. You're almost going, Lord, get away from me. Or it could be that Jesus is challenging you and prodding you to go somewhere else, to do something, to get out of the boat and follow. And part of that following means that you have to listen. But then once you've listened, you then must do. And that's the hard part. But by doing, you will get so much more joy. Because remember what I said before is admitting our errors is the prerequisite for service. Don't get caught up in, hey, I'm not worthy, because you may very well be so. And also by doing these things, who knows what the future of following Jesus will look like and where that will lead you. So for all of us now, as we just come back into worship, let's just take a moment, I think, because the next step could be anything. But let's just reflect on that next step. Let's just pause and take a moment and see where Jesus is taking us. And if you want to, certainly, you know, feel free to. I think there's going to be people at the back of the church at the end. So if you want prayer about what the next step looks like, and you don't really know and you're a little bit confused, take it. Even if you know the next chap might be coming back here. As famous people have once said, when you pray, coincidences happen. And when you don't, they don't. So I'd invite each and every one of us, in essence, should be queuing at the back just to get that free prayer. It doesn't cost us anything. But what is important is that we take the next step in what Jesus has asked us to do. And for some of us, that could be coming back next week. Could be getting stuck in a church. It could be bigger. It could be a missionary work or whatever that is. But you know, because Jesus has been speaking to you. Let's just pray. Father God, I just ask that you can help us this week to do small next steps for you. Whether that's saying good morning to those that no one ever speaks to in the office or our workplaces, to mentioning to our colleagues that we were at church this weekend, to actually committing something for you, Lord. I just pray that each and every one of us, Lord, you can prod, and we make that step. Father, just help us this week to focus on you. Help us remember that we are either in the crowd, a fisherman or Peter. Challenge us each day to follow you. Amen.